Greetings, Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I am Rob Hunter. And you, all of you, are listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
Wow, that was drawn out.
Well, you know, I debated saying, you know, all one of you, but, you know, I don't listen to the show, so I don't know how many folks are out there.
There's more than one. And we have proof, because we actually have some listener feedback. We have a couple voicemails, and we have an email. So at least three people at least listened to last week's episode.
Excellent.
So all three of them are listening to Fat Guys in the Movies. Yeah, we got Rob Hunter here from Film School Rejects, who first time on the show. You've been on Reject Radio a couple times.
I've been on Reject Radio several times, but yes, this is the first time you've invited me over to your pad.
To Fat Guys in the Movies in the magical studio in the sky. Woohoo! We have more fun here, but it takes a little more preparation. But let's do the paperwork here first. You can get a hold of us at fatguysatthemovies.com. You can get to all the podcasts that way. You can also go to iTunes and get all the podcasts and different feeds and that sort of thing. Just search Fat Guys, and Fat Guys Network should show up, or any of the subsequent shows. You can go to facebook.com/FGATM. And like our page, because we love that sort of thing. And you can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. We have an email to read this week. And we also have a couple voicemails. If you want to get in on the action, you can go to 740-205-6456. If you're calling from another country, just deal with the long distance rates. The country code plus one, I think. Isn't that country code? United States is one, isn't it?
Of course, because we are number one.
That's right, number one. Woohoo!
I saw it in a movie sometime. They mentioned that. I forget what movie it was, though.
Could be some. Oh, okay. Well, but it's not like Beirut is like 568, you know, whatever. And they have these like country codes. Like, if you ever see, like, for us stupid Americans, whenever we see phone numbers from another country, it's like a credit card number. There are so many characters in
but
it.
Does that make us stupid, or does that make us superior?
Well, both.
Clearly.
Well, you can also go to Get Glue and check in. I don't know. I don't think we have stickers yet or not. And I'm also encouraging people on Foursquare to just check in somewhere and label it the Magical Studio in the Sky and become the mayor of that Magical Studio in the Sky, because we are everywhere and we are ubiquitous. Welcome, Rob Hunter. Tell us about yourself, because like I said, you haven't been on the show, but we've worked together for quite a few years. We hung out at haven't seen each other in a while, because we hung out at Comic-Con in 2008.
Yep, but that was my second or first time going, and I believe it's my last as well.
Yeah, well, you know, hey, we went out with a bang.
We
but,
did.
But just tell us what you do on FSR and various other places.
I am one of the associate editors over at FSR. I've got a couple of recurring columns.
That's right. You outrank me.
Oh, well.
I, like, technically report to you, I think, at some point.
This should be my show. Yeah, no, I don't do much in the way of associate editing, but I've got the title. But other than
you'll
that,
occasionally,
I do the DVD
you can publish
column.
Articles.
Mm-hmm, exactly. I occasionally edit as well. But so I do the DVD column. I do a foreign film review column, and then just weekly reviews and occasional news as well.
Can I say you do a bang-up job on the DVD column?
I love my DVD column, so thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yeah.
No, it's really nice to have, because you cover as much as humanly possible, and it's incredibly comprehensive and very good to look at. Even if you, because here's the thing, you may disagree with what Rob says in his column. You may not even know what he's talking about, but you will find movies that you've never heard of, and he'll be like, well, you can avoid these movies, like these blockbuster movies. You can maybe rent these indie darlings, but what you need to buy is this bizarre Japanese horror film with schoolgirls and octopuses and all this kind of stuff. So yeah, it's quite enlightening.
That does sound like my column.
I think you don't have to write next week's column. I think I said it right there.
There you go. And that's true, though. I take pride in that, because I do like to find the little kind of obscure releases that are kind of hitting shelves that people aren't really aware of, because most others, and advertising as well as other columns, really kind of only cover the big releases, the name releases. And I have those in there, too, but I like to throw in these little things that, again, might be new to somebody, and are often worthwhile, a lot more worthwhile than the blockbusters, so...
Well, and you have a voracious appetite for foreign films. As well.
I do, yeah. I do the foreign film review column as well, which is technically weekly, but technically not. But yeah, I watch a lot of them, and I'm a big fan of movies from all around the world, and so I try and include as many in there as I can. In the DVD column, I also include things that are releasing in the UK. So I try.
Because you're a snob, right? Yeah,
well, that's part of it. I try and be as inclusive as I can.
Oh, good. I'm glad to have you on the show.
I'm glad to be here.
Hopefully we won't be storming out on each other by the end of it, so we can have you back on sometime soon.
Well, it looks like a safe grouping of movies. I don't think we're going to have too many disagreements.
Considering we haven't seen too many of them.
That way,
they didn't
screen
it for us. So since you mentioned it, let's talk about some brilliant films that are opening this week. The first one is I Don't Know How She Does It. Sarah Jessica Parker plays a senior citizen struggling and juggling motherhood and a career.
A recent study showed that women with young children don't sleep through the night. Researchers were at a loss to explain why. They could have asked me.
Taxi!
Instead of sleeping, I do the list. Number one.
Take Emily to school. I am just so jealous you get to look nice all day. We just frump around at the park.
Number two. The kids. Kindergarten bake sale. Christmas lights. Birthday party.
I don't know how you do it.
I don't know how you do it.
I don't know how she does it. All those children.
I have two.
So impressive.
You have four.
Yeah, but two of mine are twins.
Yeah.
I don't want to see this movie.
I don't think anybody wants to see it. And she's one of those people that I'm kind of curious about, because I was never a big Sex and the City fan, if you can imagine that. And I don't understand the appeal to her or the movies in the roles that she chooses. Like, I mean,
I don't think she has appeal outside of Sex and the City. I mean, really, I mean, she had like Failure to Launch, which did okay, but
that was probably more of a Matthew McConaughey fan base than her.
Yeah, I mean, she doesn't have much of a career. I mean, you have like Square Pegs and then like nothing. And then suddenly she got mildly hot in the 90s, did L.A. Story and Honeymoon in Vegas, and then went Sex and the City and then turned into a horse.
Yeah, and those two movies, the two that you just mentioned, the Honeymoon in Vegas and the other one, L.A. Story, are fantastic movies.
Yeah.
But she's not the reason why in any way, shape, or form. So yeah, she's kind of an odd one. That, I mean, she occasionally pops up in good movies, but for the most part, like when she's an actual star, the movie itself, I mean, I just can't think of a single one she's done where she was actually the star that was appealing to me.
Well, and this one bothers me too, just because they always like to cast. I mentioned this on the Idiot Boxers, our podcast earlier this week, she suffers from the problems that you see a lot in Hollywood, where they cast older actresses to play 10 years younger, and you're just like, you're not fooling anybody that she's old enough to have a 3-year-old child.
Yeah.
Unless she like had some sort of artificial insemination because her uterus is dried up or something like that.
And I don't want to know anything about that.
No, we want to stay away, far away from that as possible. This one's going to suck. It's terrible. I can tell from the trailers. And I don't want to see it, and grateful that the Weinsteins have obliged by not screening it for us.
See, I actually had a screening, but I chose not to go.
Ah, good for you. As we leave, we're going to talk about The Lion King 3D. Disney reissues a classic animated film with a new 3D conversion.
Hakuna Matata.
It means no worries. It's the sun. Slimy yet satisfying.
Ew.
Disney's The Lion King. In Disney Digital 3D.
Welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. You listened to the Lion King trailer. We don't want to talk anymore about I don't know how they made it or why they made it. So let's talk about The Lion King real quick. I actually haven't seen this. Disney screened this only in like the top 10 markets.
We had a screening here, and it was actually at probably one of the, after the Alamo in Austin, is probably my favorite theater, which is the Castro Theater here in San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
It's just a fantastic old-timey theater. They actually have a guy up front who comes up, rises out of the floor with an organ, an old-time organ, yeah, and plays for like about 30 minutes before the movie starts. It just is a really nice atmosphere, and they did a premiere there. I didn't go because it was like at 9 a.m. on a Sunday morning, and there's just not a chance in hell.
Oh, that's what's the point of that? I don't know. See, well, here's the thing. First of all, I'm a parent. I have three sons, and so I've seen The Lion King about 50 million times already. So I know the movie backwards and forwards. I don't need to see it again. I have seen the trailer projected in 3D.
Okay.
Yeah. I've also seen Lion King when they re-released it in IMAX. So, I mean, I've seen it in multiple formats and that sort of thing. And I saw it originally when it was on, you know, when it came out in 94. So I've seen it projected several times. I will say this, they're really getting the conversion down, and at least the trailer, the 3D trailer I've seen looks pretty good. I just don't know whether there's going to be much of a draw to pay premium prices to see The Lion King on the big screen again when you can get it on DVD, even though it's out in the vault technically,
right,
until it
right.
comes out on Blu-ray. You can get it on DVD. It's on VHS. Every parent who's got a child under, you know, 10 has a copy of it.
I can see it doing pretty well the first weekend, though. I don't think it's got much in the way of a kids competition in theaters right now, does it?
Straw Dogs.
I stand corrected.
It's about puppies.
The Snow Dog sequel you didn't know you wanted.
That's right. Snow Dogs, Straw Dogs, same difference. So anyways, yeah, I mean, I'm sure it looks neat. I'm sure it looks really good because, like I said, the 2 minutes of the trailer, which is, of course, that first... It's the same trailer that they ran in 1993. It's that opening sequence of Simba being born.
Right.
It looks good. It really, really looks good. The conversion has... they're really nailing the conversion.
Do you
think
it's easier to convert animation than it is live action?
I don't know. I honestly don't know because I don't know if they went back to the original cells, because that's one of the things you could say, because they have the real famous shot of the, I think it's the zebras running across, and it's
right.
these ants carrying things, and they do a neat little rack focus, and they mm-hmm. have like the flamingos flying overhead. A lot of that is done, you know, of course they have to do it with, they animate it that way. I don't know if they've gone back and rescanned it in. That seems like an awful expense to do that when you can just run through a conversion.
True.
Program. So I don't know. I mean, it looked very clean. I'll tell you that. I don't know if it holds up through the rest of the film and through some of the action, but it looked decent. Again, I don't know. It's a good movie. So
yeah, in general, I'm not a fan of 3D conversion, but the movie itself is really solid. And if you've got young kids who obviously weren't around when the movie first hit theaters. I would easily, you know, and if I can find a kid that's unattended, I'll probably grab one and bring him along or her along.
That's a good idea. I suggest you do that. I think you should. And lure him with candy into a van with no windows. That's the
or
best way to do it.
Or a straw puppy.
That's true. Okay, you want to go see straw? I'm taking him to the Lion King. Don't be silly. Well, here's the other thing. I would caution, if you got like a three-year-old, don't like take him to the IMAX 3D and sit him in that movie, because it will scare the crap out of him when they have certain scenes, because it's an intense movie.
Yeah.
And on video, you just, I mean, if it's on this like 19 inch screen in the kid's TV room, it's going to have a very different effect.
Oh, definitely.
Than if it's like 70 feet tall. Let's move on to the other kids movie from the week. This is Straw Dogs, a remake of Sam Peckinpah's violent classic about rape, murder, and revenge. What?
Education is a very difficult thing to control, Harry. One thing leads.
Work on her, not me.
No extra charge.
I don't need nothing you.
What's that?
Amy!
Are you okay?
Hello, 911.
911, what's your emergency?
There are five men with guns outside.
What?
Okay. Did you? Are you? You didn't get a chance to see this. They didn't screen it in Columbus. They screened it in Cleveland. I didn't drive up to go see it.
Yeah, they had a screening here, but I was not able to make it. It's one that I'm kind of curious about, but I'm not going to go out of my way to see it. I'm not a, and maybe this is blasphemy to some, but I'm not a huge fan of Peckinpah's original.
Mm-hmm.
So, and from what I understand, this one keeps it pretty similar. So,
yeah, I don't know. I felt it's been so long since I've seen the original, and I remember when I got the original out, I was like, oh, let's see what it is, and I'm like, it's okay. I like where it went, but it seemed so, even though it was violent and terrifying back when it was made, and it was kind of the almost borderline on that video nasties. I think I know a lot. It bothered a lot of people.
Yeah.
When the original came out, it's real tame now.
That's what I was gonna say. I think two things. One, like when I, because I didn't obviously watch it, you know, back in the 70s when it was made, but recently when I watched it, it struck me as being not nearly as as aggressive as the impression I had gotten from people and from just people talking about it. Yeah. But yeah, I imagine back then it was, and that's the other thing too, is the Dustin Hoffman's character going from, and James Marsden's character in the new one, but going from such the weak-willed, you know, little, you know, nebbish little guy to someone who has to stand up and fight. It took, I don't know, the movie, Peckinpah's movie, just took so long, and it was so frustrating watching that character go through that arc when you knew where it was going to lead. It just, that was part of the problem with the movie for me, and I'm curious if they've adjusted it at all for the new one, but it just was such a long process to get there, and it just was kind of a turnoff for me. And again, back in the 70s, maybe it was more impressive.
The other thing with that is, the one thing that I found somewhat, and I don't know, not disturbing is not the right word, sort of offsetting, was how sort of, how sexist it was in the 70s in with her character, where it's kind of like she's like, oh, she's asking for it, you know. That was like, you're watching it, you're just like, is that what he's saying? Is that what's happening here? And I'm wondering how they temper that for today's audiences.
Right.
My worry about it is that it's just going to become exploitative, and because the first one, the original, wasn't. A lot of people maybe painted it that way, but the original wasn't. The original was telling a story, a disturbing story, but it was telling a story. Whereas this one seems to be, I mean, it's coming, it's Screen Gems. Isn't it Screen Gems?
I believe so. But it's Rod Lurie, the director. And I just don't see him doing anything exploitation. I mean, I think he's a fantastic
it's
director.
So off, it's off his beaten path.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's one, like I said, I'll probably check out, but I'm not going to rush out for it.
Yeah, I'm probably gonna see it this weekend just so I can review it somewhere, because
right,
I have to do that. But it's I'm not a big fan of movies with rape in them. It's just not a thing I like.
Yeah, I don't know what's wrong with you.
I know I'm such a square,
such a prude.
but especially when it's one that it's like, what's this movie about? It's about a person who gets raped. You know, it's like sort of like when they did the remake of Last House on the Left,
right.
When they did the remake of I Spit on Your Grave. At least like with The Hills Have Eyes, there's a lot more going on with The Hills Have Eyes, whereas it's all just like, you're like, okay, let's get to that scene, and there it is. Okay, I've seen this before. You know?
I'm a huge fan of the last House on the Left remake.
Really,
I can't stand the original, and the Espy in Your Grave, old and new, are both garbage.
See, I love the original Last House on the Left because it's so ludicrous and poorly made.
It's not offensive. I agree. It's too ridiculous to be offensive, but it also is just too boring. I mean, for all the things that are happening on screen, it's still kind of boring because it's so kind of like cheap and poorly done.
Yeah.
But the remake I thought was just a classy affair.
It's just a fresh breeze.
It was.
Yeah. I don't know. For me, it's just like, I mean, how many other ways can you film a scene like that? I've seen plenty of movies, you know, and you're just kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, it's to me, it's like torture porn, which came and went, because it's like, okay, how many more scenes of somebody getting tortured are we going to, you know?
Yeah, I agree. It's a good time to get up and walk out and, you know, use the restroom or grab a drink.
Yeah. Anyways, let's talk about the next one, which is Drive. In which,
yes.
Ryan Gosling. Yeah, actually, we're gonna leave you on the trailer for this one because we're nearing the end of the segment. But this one, I assure you, we both have seen. So this one has Ryan Gosling. Well, excuse me. I don't know what that was. Ryan Gosling stars as a driver for hire who falls in love with his next door neighbor and makes some hard choices to protect her.
Sounds like you had a Gosling in your throat.
If I drive for you, you give me a time and a place, I give you a 5-minute window. Anything happens in that 5 minutes and I'm yours, no matter what. I don't sit in while you're running it down. I don't carry a gun. I drive.
You put this kid behind the wheel, there's nothing he can't do.
My husband is coming home.
Where is he?
He's in prison.
There's some guys that want me to do a job for him, and I'm not gonna do it.
What's the job? 18 miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh yeah.
Welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies, where we're talking about movies coming out this weekend, and so far we haven't seen any of them.
But now we have.
But now we have, and guess what? It's freaking awesome.
It is. I will say
I'm not sure
this.
How you feel about it.
No, I loved it. Drive, I thought, was a fantastic movie. I want to hear what you have to say first, so go ahead.
Well, it's from Nicholas Winding Refn, the director, and Ryan Gosling is the, as you already said before the trailer there, he stars as a movie stunt driver who kind of moonlights for criminals. He'll give him 5 minutes of his time as a getaway driver for, like, robberies or whatever. And the story kind of unfolds with that, and then he ends up meeting a new neighbor in his building and kind of falls for her, and things start falling apart around him.
Yeah.
And it is just an absolutely brilliant movie. I'm absolutely in love with this movie. And Carey Mulligan is the girl, so that helps things as well.
I believe Carey Mulligan plays Michelle Williams in this movie, doesn't she?
Which is never a bad role to play. I was here for Halloween. But the other actor in this movie that definitely deserves mention and honestly I hope gets some kind of award recognition is Albert Brooks, who I'm a huge fan of, and he plays a pseudo mobster guy who Gosling has some dealings with.
He plays a an organized crime version of Albert Brooks,
which is awesome, is it not?
Well, that's what's so great is it's like it's Albert Brooks playing Albert Brooks. It's just he's into some
Except
crazy
he's a
shit.
Badass.
Yeah. I mean, like they bring in like Ron Perlman's in, and he plays an outlaw, and you're like, ah, this is just a Jewish version of the guy he's in, Sons of Anarchy.
Sons of Anarchy, yeah.
Yeah, because he plays a Jewish pizza shop owner. Am I correct?
Yep, he does.
I am correct on that. Okay. And a
yeah, no, the movie, the thing is, the movie is the trailers and the ads that are kind of out for it now. I'm really curious to see the general audience reaction to this movie because it. It is really atypical. It's not a typical movie at all. Even with that plot line, which sounds like maybe 100 other movies, it really doesn't go where you expect. The whole mood of the film, the pacing is just completely different from anything that people are used to. And like I said, I loved it, and I'm curious to see how it kind of goes over with other people.
Yeah. See, now what's interesting about this is I hate Ryan Gosling. I just hate him. He's one of those actors. Do you ever have those actors where you're just like, I don't like this guy, or I don't like this
I hate the way he talks, because he kind of mumbles, and he's like got something in his mouth the whole time. I'm not sure what's going on there.
Yeah, most movies I see him in, I'm just like, I don't like, and I just don't like him in the movie. I mean, name any movie he's been in. If I've seen it, I'm just like, he made it worse. Gina Davis is that way for me, too. I don't like Gina Davis.
Oh, yeah.
Davis.
I'm that way with Bette Midler and Cher.
Matthew Modine. I mean, there are these actors that just rub me wrong. And it has nothing to do with Cutthroat Island, because I love that fucking movie. But this
what
one.
About, what about Crazy Sexy Love? Did you see that one?
Oh, no. I
thought he was.
Oh,
I thought he was good in that. I
hated that movie.
Serious?
Yeah, I hated it. I was just, okay. Oh, it's Hollywood preaching to you about soulmates. And I'm like, really, Hollywood? Hollywood, well, you're going to preach to me about true love, for Christ's fucking sake?
You're terribly wrong about that one, but I'm just happy to see that you're right about this one.
Well, here's the thing. But in spite of my just deep-seated hatred for Ryan Gosling, I thought the movie was fantastic. I think part of it was because he played something different than what he normally does.
Different, and he also does not talk a lot. The character has got lots of silent space throughout it.
Yeah.
And so I think that helps, too, especially with his goofy voice.
Well, and it's also, it's not just him mumbling and being cool. It's just him being soft-spoken. It's a different...
Right. Exactly.
On the surface, you think, oh, it's just another Ryan Gosling character. But it's not. He's very different. And the other thing that I noticed in this, not only the fact that I loved sort of this weird retro Miami Vice-ish feel to the music and the and the titling,
the
even.
Neon and the look, yeah.
What I loved about it was the pacing, because it's so aware of itself with the pacing, because it's like driving through rush hour traffic.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly the best way I can, because I'm like, oh, I get it. And about halfway through the movie, I'm like, oh, I see what he's doing here. Because you're like coming and you move and you think you're going and then you're stopping and then you're sitting there for a while and then you move. And then suddenly you're like, boom, I can move. And then it goes. Yep.
And he sets it up nicely, too, because he gives you like the first maybe 30 minutes of the movie. You get a couple scenes where it's just him driving.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just that. I mean, there's no dialogue of any kind. You've got music playing. You see the different shots of him driving from inside the car and such. And there's nothing else going on. It is just the stopping. and go. It is like the slow, you know, driving down the road, taking the turns.
Yeah.
And then so later when it kind of, that kind of melds into the character interaction as well, as far as the pacing goes, I mean, it definitely fits, as you're saying there.
Yeah. Yeah. And definitely, and they have a great, great cast. You also have Bryan Cranston. This is kind of his year for doing the supporting roles. He's been showing up in a lot of things.
He's very good in it. I think that one of the things, the biggest things for me is it's actually a really good, kind of offbeat and different, but a really good little love story too.
Yeah.
That I was happy with.
Here's the thing. I thought the story, the setup of the love story is incredibly trite. But I thought where it played out and how it played out was far more interesting than the setup.
Well, I'll give you that, because I think that it wasn't interested in any of the setups. I mean, the initial plot of him being the driver for these getaways really doesn't become much. They get into a little bit where he's going to be a race car driver, and they gave like a good chunk of time to that, but then that doesn't really go anywhere, because it's actually more about, well, I'm not going to say what it's about, but it goes in different directions than you expect, and it's...
Well, it does these little bait and switch things that are really neat, which I'm not going to say what it is. I mean, in the explanation, you already say what he does for a living, but there's a scene where you like think he's doing something else for a living, and it was very deliberate of saying, oh, no, that's really not what he's doing. You know what I mean?
Right. And it got a little chuckle from the audience, too.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it's a really aware movie, but in a good way. It's not this self-aware crap.
It's not
like
a Scream type thing. No, it's super smart, and it's just beautifully crafted.
Yeah,
from frame one all the way to the end. Like I said, I'm just really curious and fearful as far as people's reactions, because in the screening I went to, I actually had some walkouts.
Yeah.
That were seemed to be both due to the pacing as well as due there is some a few scenes of some pretty graphic violence in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, again, I think it's just, you know, beautifully done, but some people were laughing out of shock.
I don't think it's gonna do well.
I don't think it will. I think it might do okay the first weekend, because just the ads, I think, are well done.
Mm.
But it's just not the movie that people are expecting.
Yeah, and
it's better.
Yeah. I official Fat Guy grade, I think we can give on this one, as we both say it rocks.
Definitely.
But that's a nice segue into the box office segment, where we can talk a little bit about how this is going to do and that sort of thing. But first, let's talk about the box office winners. Last week it was excuse me, another Gosling in my throat. Contagion came out on top, and I kind of wish it didn't, just because I didn't want to have to sit through some of these headlines. Like, I literally saw one that says, Contagion coughs up a record week. I'm just like, really? Oh, wow, that's just gross. Contagion blows a loogie on the box office.
Contagion infects the box office.
Yeah, and it's the one that knocked off The Help. But the thing is, and although I love The Help, I thought I liked The Help, and I think it's a good movie, and it's done some amazing box office. But it's not all because of The Help. It's the fact that it was opening against stuff like Bucky Larson and.
Yeah, that, and it's well, The Help is in like what, it had like 3 weeks at number one, didn't it? Something like that.
It was for the first week. It was number two because it came behind.
Okay, right.
And then it had 3 weeks at number one, which I don't know if any other movie has done that. I think The Sixth Sense was the last movie that did that.
Really?
Or something.
Well, like it was that. Just good timing for the movie, and it worked out well. But I mean, that only made like $8 million this past weekend. So I mean, I would have been surprised if none of the new releases beat that. And
Contagion would have had a really
It's good
bomb.
That Contagion had too. Yeah. You know,
so that's, I mean, that was expected. The Warrior was really, really soft, which I'm kind of glad to see. I hated The Warrior. Did you like The Warrior?
Really?
Or Warrior?
That was okay. I don't get the love for it, but I think it's an okay movie.
Yeah, I was just annoyed with the movie. I started to hate. It was one of those movies that I'm like, eh, it's okay. And then like,
see, I'm not a big fan of Nick Nolte, but I like the two leads a lot, Joel Edgerton and Tom Hardy. And so I think the two of them alone may kind of make it worth watching.
Yeah, I mean, it threw everything at you, and it was, I think what I hated the most about this movie was there was no depth to it at all. I found no depth at all, because it's like each character was just so one-dimensionally focused on one thing. And so there was no depth to that. And then what they did is they threw things at you. Like, they're like, but he's reading, he's listening to Moby Dick. And see what we're doing here? He's obsessed with things, and everyone's got their own obsessions. And we're going to tie this to it. So we're not just beating people up. We're not just big thugs. And then look, we got Beethoven in here. And so instead of, so what they use for Beethoven, they used the most thuggishly stupid, blatantly obvious Beethoven tune over and over and over again. It's like, I get it. He wrote Ode to Joy. The only thing that would have been, like, more obvious as a Beethoven tune would have been, like, if he's coming out going, da-da-da-da. It just, it thought it was so smart, and it's not. By a long shot.
Well, I will claim it's smart. I think it's an entertaining diversion.
Yeah.
Okay, how about that?
I don't know. I did not like it at all. I was rolling my eyes at the end, checking my watch every couple minutes. And the worst part about it is if you see the trailers... And even if you just like read, if you read a blurb about it, it's the story is it's like two brothers face to face and mixed martial arts. You're like, thank you. I know everything that happens for the first 2 hours and 10 minutes of the movie. I just don't know who wins.
Exactly.
So, anyways, and then you had The Debt, which I didn't like either, and Columbia.
I haven't seen the remake. I've seen the original film, and I was not a fan.
Okay.
And so I'm not familiar with the. I'm imagining the new one. Pretty much keeps it straightforward, but
were the Mossad agents in the original movie, were they all weepy whiny and like, oh my god, I just have to, I can't leave the apartment.
they were pretty weak. I kind of expected more action and more intrigue and just kind of more, you know, bravado, and it really wasn't there. I understand like the initial setup and what happens in the, you know, in the old timey half of the story, but I kind of
old timey half of the story. is that an official expression?
It is.
And then the young whippersnappers.
But yeah, and that's just it though. The young whippersnappers. That half of the film was just so. I don't know. It just was so underwhelming, and that's when it really should have picked up, as far as I'm concerned, based on the storyline, and it just didn't. It just was really kind of like a wet noodle.
I'm going to say this now because The Debt's been out for a couple weeks. So I'm going to, if you haven't seen it, you're worried about spoilers. It's your own damn fault because it's been out for a couple weeks. I'm going to mention something at the ending, and I mentioned this when it came out. I said I can't say because I don't like to put any spoilers on a movie that's like new. Right. But this one's been out for a couple weeks. The fight climax. There's always like that big fight climax in these things. It mm-hmm. was between Helen Mirren and a guy with a walker. It is the funniest thing I have seen all year. I mean, Horrible Bosses, nothing compared to this fight scene. Because it's just ridiculous. These two ridiculously old people fighting each other. And it just, I mean, if they would have just changed the soundtrack, it would have been hilarious.
Well, it already sounds more exciting than the original, so there's that at least.
Yeah, I think they're the worst Mossad agents ever. If I were a Mossad agent and I saw this movie, I'd want to murder the director because I'd be like, what the?
That's, yeah, no, it's definitely not going to help the recruiting over there.
Yeah, we're way more composed than this.
You got to hope so.
Yeah, and then Colombiano was there, so.
We didn't get a screening for that, and I never made it to the theater to see it, so.
You didn't miss anything.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
It's not a good movie. I said when I actually saw it, because they didn't screen it early for us either, but in my review, my radio review, I said it uses, or maybe I put this on Twitter, I said it uses, not only does it use the logic and continuity of a movie like Birdemic, but it also uses the physics. it's nice. Not good. It's bad. So this week, what do you think's going to win? Do you think it's going to be Drive?
See, I don't know. I think here's the thing. If Contagion drops, say on average they drop about 50-60%, you figure, right? There's a chance it could still hold on because Drive, I think, in general is not going to do well. I think it comes down to, one, the appeal of Gosling, and two, the ads that are making it look like it's probably a bit more traditionally exciting.
But I don't think Gosling has a fan. He's not like...
He's not a huge fan base, but there are girls that like him.
But it's not like Matthew McConaughey, where he can be in the worst crappy movie ever, and there are people who will go see
that. I don't
know.
I think they're kind of like swinging. I think they're both. I think McConaughey's dropping and Gosling is probably on his way up. He's not gonna make anything like, you know, open huge.
Crazy Stupid Love helped him in his career, I think.
It did, and that was a romantic comedy, and so I think that helped seal him with the ladies. Plus all his scenes without a shirt.
Yeah.
He keeps his shirt on here. Sorry, ladies.
But, but there you go. He just blew those three people.
He's still as attractive as can be. So I don't know. I think there's a chance it might take the one. But like I said, but if it takes the number one spot, it's going to be with maybe 13, 14 million.
Yeah.
I think it depends on how much Contagion drops.
Yeah. I don't know if Contagion's going to have staying power. I think it was just that people are just waiting for a movie that just didn't suck.
Right.
To come out, or a movie that wasn't like niche, like Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. I think was a good movie. I just think it was so niche. I don't think people were going to see it.
Well, Contagion also had like some recognizable faces that people like and people want to go see, and so that helped the opening weekend.
It had Gwyneth Paltrow having a seizure on the poster,
which everybody wants to see that.
Who doesn't want to see a movie where Gwyneth Paltrow dies in the first 5 minutes? You don't have to wait to the end of the movie for them to cut off her head. She dies right at the beginning.
Sweet.
Yeah, I think it drives in only 2,400 theaters, so it's not in as many as Contagion, but it's actually a decent theater count for a release. I don't know how she does it. It's going to just tank.
Yeah, no, that's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, it's going to do better than Bucky Larson. I said Bucky Larson's not even going to get the top 10. It was 15.
What, didn't they get like their record for like being the worst or second worst showing in wide
it was
per screen average or whatever?
Creature got that too, but I kind of like Creature for just the sort of that crappy direct-to-video type of movie it was, even though it
Creature
wasn't.
Surprised me though that not that it was good because it wasn't, but that it got such a wide release for what it is.
I was surprised at how many theaters they got it in. I mean, I liked Creature to a degree. I liked Creature for what it was.
Yeah,
but it's not a theater movie. No. I think that
I mean, good for them for getting it done, but yeah, it didn't belong there.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been a movie that you would have gotten, it's not like sci-fi original movie, because those are just way too aware of how crappy they are. Mm-hmm. It was one of those that you would have been like, oh, look, I want to get this guy in a rubber suit. Boom. Yeah. Lion King, I don't think is going to do that well, simply because 3D movies actually haven't been, the 3D, just throwing a movie into 3D isn't doing well for movies. There are movies that do well in spite of it.
Yeah, but I think it depends on if it's more of an event movie. But even the bigger ones, I mean, like I think that the 2D screenings when they're available are doing better business. And I mean, you can probably say maybe it's the economy, because people go into the theater with a family aren't going to want to shell out an extra $4 per person.
I don't think people are. And I've said this many times on the show. I don't think people are like fleeing from 3D. I just think people don't want to spend the money.
Right.
I mean, if they cost the same amount, or if it was $1 more, I think you wouldn't have the problem.
But right. No, I agree. I think it's only the online bloggers and folks who are bitching about 3D in general. I think the regular audience is more of a money issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I know a manager of one of the theaters here, and she says, yeah, they some people get mad that they have to pay $13, $14 to see a movie instead of $9.
Right.
And people have complained about that. And in fact, I think it's hurt movies like Shark Night, because people would be like, that's a throwaway movie. As Fright Night, I think it hurt Fright Night, because it's a throwaway movie. It's like, oh, let's go see the horror movie. Oh, I don't want to pay that much.
Right, exactly.
You know? So Lion King, I don't think it's an event enough movie. I mean, like I said, anyone who's seen it, the only people who are going to go see it, it's sort of like a revival. Like Ghostbusters is coming back to the theaters. That's going to tank. Nobody's going to go see that in the theaters. Because, I mean, like, except for, like,
if they put a 3 after the title, I bet it'll get some audience.
Well, yeah. But if you just do that, and then suddenly people are like, wait a minute, this is the same Ghostbusters.
No refund.
Harold Ramis isn't fat. What's going on? And Straw Dogs, I don't think it's going to do well.
No, I don't think so either. I think it's probably going to end up being Contagion, but I'm going to give a sliver of a chance to Drive. And honestly, I hope Drive does do well.
Yeah.
But I just, no matter how well it does, the second weekend is going to be a big drop.
Here's the thing. We haven't had the George Clooney Oscar movie coming out, and when that happens, that's when people are going to start taking the Oscar movie seriously.
No.
But like Warrior and Drive are sort of, you know, in this lull. It's funny, because you've got to, it's the timing of the Oscar movies is weird. Like Ides of March is coming up. I think that's going to be like, sort of like that's the green flag in front of the awards movie season, even though they've been releasing the award movies lately.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of curious, though, because Moneyball is next week.
I have no
interest. And that one has got potential.
If it was called Monkey Ball, I would love to see it. But
I thought you'd be there for the balls, period.
Well, you know, hey. You know, we got to have our fun, don't we?
Of course.
So anyways, yeah, that's That's the prediction. Let's talk real quickly about we got a couple voicemails. Let's play one of the voicemails. This is from our friend Thomas from Seattle.
Thomas.
Yay. So let's hear what he has to say.
Hey, Kevin. This is Thomas from Seattle. Hey, I was wondering. I saw a Jason Statham movie called Blitz recently, and I think it went direct to DVD. And I was wondering, is there ever a time when direct to DVD is almost respectable? I mean, I know that it used to have like this really bad stigma, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, but now it seems like some kind of almost legitimate movies just go direct to DVD. Anyway, I was just wondering what you thought about that. Again, Thomas from Seattle, and I'll talk to you all soon. Bye.
All right, so there you go. What do you think? Direct to DVD, is it ever appropriate, respectable, honest, whatever?
Yeah, I think it is, because I think there's so much more to it than just the quality of the movie. I mean, it's kind of a general assumption, but oftentimes it's, you know, distribution problems, it's money issues that cause it to go the DVD route instead of getting a theater run. There's actually a good example that just came out this week, a movie called Haunting at the Beacon.
Okay.
The Haunting at the Beacon with Terry Polo.
From Meet the Parents fame.
Exactly. I think it actually might, I don't even know for sure, but I get the feeling it was maybe like a TV movie, but I don't know from where, and I didn't bother researching it. But it's like a haunted apartment building film. And it actually, I mean, it's not hardcore as far as there's a little bit of gore in there, but nothing that, you know, is going to really mess with anybody. But there's some really effective scares in there.
Is it something like 100 feet or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. And it just a really solid movie. It kind of surprised me because it feels, like I said, like a TV movie, but it does really well with the characters. It spends time on some of the side characters. It has some effective scares. And the writing takes it in a direction that, you know, I wasn't expecting. And that's always a good thing for me when I'm watching a movie, to be surprised by it.
I think that to answer, and specifically to answer Thomas's question, I think, yes, there are times, but it depends. It depends on the movie. It depends on the genre. It depends on the order. Because if it's like the third sequel and it's going direct to video and everything else has been in the theaters, it's not a good sign.
There are ones that are obvious money grabs, like the American Pie ones and stuff like that.
And there's also, but like genre things. Like you mentioned this Haunting of the Beacon. Another one I can think of was Amusement. Did you see Amusement? I thought that was actually an effectively done film.
I've seen the DVD cover,
but
I haven't seen the movie.
It was one of those that I got as a direct-to-DVD, and I reviewed it, and I was like, this was actually way better than I would have expected for direct-to-DVD. Now, originally, it was supposed to be, because you'll hear this all the time, Trick or Treat was the same way. It was supposed to get a theatrical release, but for some reason, it didn't. But that might be good, because it's much more expensive to put a movie in the theaters, and, you know, generally, it's a bad sign. If it's like the original the Captain America from 1992, that was supposed to be in the theaters, and then just they didn't because it was a dumb movie. So it depends on the film. But every now and then you get those. Sometimes you get a comedy that's a fun little comedy and ends up making money simply because it's they didn't have the expense of prints and advertising and that sort of thing.
Right.
So
yeah, it's really, I mean, it's hit or miss. I mean, there are general views on it that, yeah, okay, direct-to-DVD is crap and theater is the way to go. But, I mean, for every, you know, bad direct-to-DVD movie, I mean, you can find crappy theater movies as well.
Oh, yeah.
So there's no guarantee of quality just because it hits the theater. So it really becomes a matter of just, you know, hit or miss, and, you know, some are worth more than others, I think.
Yeah. And then, of course, porn. Porn is always good. Direct-to-DVD.
Clearly.
Of course. So... now we've got an email that we can address. This is from Ty from St. Louis, and I'm just gonna read. I'm gonna summarize his email because he does go along with this, but he's referencing when I was talking with Rudy last week, and we were talking about George Lucas and why he's tinkering with the Star Wars movies. I'll just read an excerpt from it. He goes, an interesting theory I heard about the remakes is that every time Lucas does one, that he is able to get a new copyright issued for the series. If that's true, he's already extended it over 3 decades. He's obviously not worried about losing it in his lifetime, but if he keeps doing this, it'll add to another generation of his family to ownership to the franchise. I've heard that too, and it's true. Every time you do every time you issue something, you know it's a copyright. But copyright law works a little differently. They revised it in 78. Now, maybe this could be why he's tinkering with the original, the first one, because it came out before they revised the copyright law in the late 70s. Now, just the copyright arises by operation of law by the act of creation. If you and I doing this show, it's immediately copyrighted by Fat Guys in the Movies just because it exists. And then copyright, whoever it's assigned to, according to the 78 copyright law, that person, and I'm using that, putting air quotes on that, that person has the copyright to that through his or her lifetime, plus, I think, 75 years or something like that. It's very, very respectable to the original author. Now, one reason I say person in quotes is because of a corporation.
Right.
You know, which is why Superman is still copyrighted, because DC Comics is a corporation, and everything they, every time they come out with a new issue of Superman, they've copyrighted, they've trademarked it, and trademarks very, very different. But I don't know who owns the copyrights to the original Star Wars movies, whether it's 20th Century Fox or whether it's Lucasfilm or whether it's Lucas, or if he's purchased the copyrights or had the assignment of copyright.
Right.
So that's possible. I just think he likes to tinker.
I would say so. I think it's, I mean, it's aside from maybe American Graffiti, it's the only thing he's touched. I mean, I give him a little bit of credit as a producer on the Indiana Jones movies, I guess. But Star Wars is really, it's what he is known for, and so it's kind of, even though he occasionally, you know, takes little side trips to other films and other events, I think Star Wars is always going to be the core for him, and so he always thinks that he can probably make it a little bit better. And even though he's not making it better, I mean, if he believes he is, it's his prerogative to do so. My only real argument against it is that I think that he should be, I would be appreciative if he would keep the original and make them available still as well. Yeah. I mean, people can choose, you know. I mean, I got no problem with him, you know, making his changes and such, but I'm kind of it's too bad that he's not open enough to say, okay, well, here's the original is untouched, you know, and then here's my newfangled, you know, improved versions. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So. No, I get you. I think you're right there. I don't want to say too much more on this because I kind of beat the dead horse last week on the show, but I think you're right. I mean, it'd be nice if it was available. But I used the example last week of saying when he released them in 1997. It was like winning at the craps table your first time, because they did incredibly well. And I think he's just in his mind, he's going back to this. Well, people liked it then. People thought these changes were awesome back then. And they did. It did very, very well. And then you've got the fact that the DVDs of the original trilogy, which were just rescans. But even though they came out in 2006, people didn't have 69 televisions. Those weren't that prevalent. So just doing the 4:3 letterboxed made sense for that. Now it'd be nice to have an anamorphic version, but I think if they, you know, but those sales of those discs were abysmal.
Well, I mean, he's going to have big sales off of this. I mean, so he's going to keep going with this kind of thing. I just wish, I mean, for his sake and for everybody's sake, it'd be nice if he maybe tried some new things and kind of let this one rest. But I think bottom line, it's his prerogative. And so, you know, beyond that, I don't really care.
Something else I said this last week, and I'll reiterate this. For all those fanboys out there who are raging and foaming at the mouth about this, and fuming, the best thing you could do is to make sure that Red Tails become... Is it Red Tails? The one about the Tuskegee
Airmen? The World War II? Yeah.
Make that the biggest movie of the year. And then the next one if he makes Howard the Duck 2, make that, go see that movie and make it as much money as Avatar. And eventually he'll just be like, oh, I got these other things. I don't need to worry about Star Wars. But he's going on Star Wars because he's had that. You know, that's consumed his life for 3 decades.
Yep. Agreed.
All right. Another thing that Ty mentions is he talks about 28 Days Later. We mentioned it because we were talking about the damn monkeys that cause all these problems in the movies. He mentions, he goes, I thought it was interesting to learn that in the early days of psychotherapy in the UK, a patient could be kept for 28 days until their will, against their will, for observation if the doctor thought they might be insane. I've always wondered if the writers of 28 Days Later might have intended a different possible ending. In the first one, he does wake up in a hospital after all. So So that's his comments on that. I don't know. It is possible.
Like it was a dream or something?
Well, that he was insane.
That would have been a shitty. I'm sorry. That would have been a bad ending.
Yeah. It was all a dream or it wasn't real is not a good ending. It never is. It never will be. It worked in The Wizard of Oz. And it hasn't worked.
If you believe it was all a dream.
Yeah. But it hasn't worked ever since. It would have been. I could see that happen. Because I've seen writers. There was a movie. Oh, God. What was it? It started the guy from Ed. It was another direct-to-video horror film. Sublime. Did you ever see Sublime?
I did not.
I'm sorry. I'm going to spoil it for you. It's all a dream. And what's infuriating about the movie is if you listen to the commentary track, the guy's like patting himself on the back for what an awesome ending it is. Because he's like, oh, we did this. And I'm like, dude, this is like, this was like a bad ending in the Twilight Zone days 40 years ago. And he's aren't I clever? Isn't this awesome?
I can't even think of an example where it's worked recently. I mean, in a short form, like in Twilight Zone, maybe, you know, Tales from the Dark Side, whatever. But in a film, like you said, Wizard of Oz. But I mean, after going through a film and investing your time and your emotions into a movie, into the characters, to reach an end, to find out that, you know, everything that came before is inconsequential.
Yeah.
To me, it's just a real kick in the nuts.
Like, do you ever see Identity with John Cusack?
Yeah. That one, I think it's a little bit different, and that one I actually like. Mm. But that one I think is different from, I don't like the very, very end of it, but the revelation at the end, I think is different from the whole it's a dream thing. I think it works.
I think the revelation in the end works, but it's so disappointing because you have this thing. It's sort of like The Village. If you saw The Village with,
yeah.
Where you're just like, what the hell are these creatures? Like, oh, it's not real.
Yeah, well,
that was a great
setup.
Wouldn't it be great if they were these? Definitely works better than the
execution in the end. Yeah.
Well, I mean, but one of those things that you're just like, wouldn't it be really cool if they were in this village and there were these crazy ass creatures that would like steal them away?
Yeah, because that first creature scene was freaking terrifying.
Yeah.
In the village,
and you're
and
just
then
like,
you realize it's, you know, some dude under a blanket.
Yeah, it's just Adrian Brody, just the guy from the piano. Or the pianist. I don't know. Anywho, we got one more voicemail. See, we're loaded up this week. Check this out. This is Jeff from Sierra Madre. He's been on. He's called in before, I believe. So here's what he had to say.
Kevin and this week's co-host. Hey, this is Jeff calling from Sierra Madre. I listened to last week's episode. Enjoyed it immensely. I, too, had the misfortune of watching the Star Wars Holiday Special as it was being aired. Unlike you, Kevin, I thought it was really awful at the time, although I couldn't have told you why. I just remember sitting there about halfway through it saying, this has got to get better, right? Anyway, another part of the reason why I called in was you had a discussion on would movies play or be shown if nobody showed up. I only know of my one movie-going experience I went to see. I believe it was Woody Allen's Night and Fog. And I was the only one in the theater. And I knew the theater manager really well and asked him afterwards, said, hey, what do you do if I hadn't purchased the ticket? He said, well, we are contractually obligated to run the film through the projector X number of times for showing. But we just take the bulb out of the projector, so we run it to a blank screen. That way we can say we've done it how many ever times they contracted for the week of the movie or 2 weeks of the movie or whatever they've rented it for. Anyway, that was my one movie-going experience in a small theater in Delaware back in the mid-90s or early 90s or whenever that film came out. Hope you have a great week. Looking forward to this week's show, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
So there you go. That's Jeff. That's not really a question. Just sort of more of a explanation. I wonder how that works with digital prints, though.
Good question. I would imagine they're still, you know, bound by a contract, though.
Yeah, because at least 15 years ago or so, when Jeff saw this movie, they were contracted to run the print so many times, and that makes sense. You know, pulling out the bulb. But like I said, for a digital movie, I mean, I guess you could just turn the brightness down on the projector.
Yeah, I don't know what you do though, because you also still have folks who show up late for movies, and so, I mean, you can't wait and then start it when they get there, because then you're going to mess up your entire schedule. So they have to have it running if somebody shows up late already. So,
yeah, that's true. And I mean, I've only been. There have been two movies that I've ever gone to that I've been completely the only one in the theater at, and one of them was a friend of mine and I went to go see Leprechaun. I think it was Leprechaun. Was that the one with Jennifer Aniston? She was in the original.
It was. Yeah. Yep.
We saw Leprechaun in an empty theater, and that was kind of funny. And then I saw The Love Guru. I watched The Love Guru. I was the only one in the theater. Oh, no. Another one. I saw, what was that Larry the Cable Guy movie? Delta Farce? I think I was the only one in the movie theater for that one.
Good Lord, man.
Well, what do you, I was an Avatar. I was the only one. No, nobody was ever the only one in an Avatar screening. You know, these movies had billions of people going. So, I see a lot of crappy movies.
Apparently.
That's what happens.
I guess you're contractually obligated as well.
I am. Well, because, I you know what, here's the thing, and you can probably attest to this, because you see so many movies as well. We always run into these people who are like, I want to be a critic, and it's always like at the beginning of award season or award season slash Christmas movie season. Holiday
they just
season.
Want the screeners,
or at the beginning of the summer, and they're like, I want to see that. I'm gonna be a critic now, and they're like this summer they would have been like, I want to go see Thor, I want to go see X-Men, I want to go see Pirates, I want to go see Harry Potter. And then when they're coming around times when they're trying to go see Bucky Larson and and Columbiana and Our Idiot Brother and stuff like that, they're nowhere to be found because, yeah. And then I've known people like that. I actually know professional critics that are like, oh, I only go see the movies I like. And I'm like, well, that's kind of, because here's the thing. When you see, I've seen a great example of a movie. Did you see Whiteout?
Yeah, terrible.
But here's the thing. I saw it and I'm like, it's not a good movie. But I've seen a lot worse. I mean, it's you have to see the worst movies of all to really get your barometer set. Because what happens...
But just because there are worse movies doesn't excuse how bad a bad movie is, though.
Well, but I mean, it wasn't... But my point being is that there's a lot of people that will go see a movie, and if all they do is they go see the movies that they really, really like, when they see a movie that's just not that good, they'll be like, oh, it was terrible, and I'm like... It's not worth that much hate. You know what I mean? That sort of thing. Because that's the thing. I wasn't a fan of Whiteout, but I was like, I've seen a lot. Trust me, I've seen a lot worse. So, you know, if you're going to be like, well, this is a zero-star movie, or this is an F, depending on what grading scale you use, you're like, well, this movie is an A or a five-star, you'd be like, well, this is a two-star. It's not terrible, but it's not great, but it's way better than...
Yeah, but all of that is so subjective anyways when it gets down to actually having to assign a rating of some kind to it.
Well, that's what we're there for.
Well, I know, but I mean, but it's, you know, a two to you is a four to me, and it's not because I see, you know, fewer movies necessarily. It's because it's a four to me. I found more to like in it.
Yeah. Well, no.
I
mean, but I
see what you're saying, but I think once you apply the grades and the ratings, I think it pretty much... It all goes out the window.
I'm just saying that one person. That there are people who declared movies like... And I'm talking about average people. I'm not talking about critics, because critics in general see all of them, or at least have seen the spectrum. But there's a lot of people I know who will only watch a certain type of movie. They'll only watch this, or they only watch that. And then when they see a movie, they'll be like, oh, that's terrible. And you're just like, have you seen this? And then you show them a really bad one, and they're just like, whoa, I had no idea. This is really awful. And then you go back. The Rocketeer, I'll give you that's a great example of one. When I was younger... And I haven't seen The Rocketeer in a while, so just to throw that out there. I remember when I saw The Rocketeer when I was like 19 or 20, whatever, however old I was when it came out. And I was like, it was okay. And I didn't like it. I mean, it was just sort of a lukewarm feel to me. And thinking back on it, I'm like, well, compared to a lot of the shit that I've seen over the last 20 years, it's a brilliant film. But at the time, I was just going to see the movies that really, really interested me. And right. So it was on the lower end of the spectrum, but, you know.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, obviously, the more you see, the better idea you're going to have of what's actually great and what's actually, you know, garbage.
Yeah.
So that definitely helps.
Yeah. So, anyways, that's all I have to say on that. was that Forrest Gump? Hold on a second. Let's move on to the Fat Guy Five. This one is five great driving movies, in honor of Straw Dogs. No, it's in the drive.
So this is Raping While Driving?
Raping While Driving. Yeah, it's the best drive rape movies ever. You know we don't have on the list, speaking of driving and raping, is Drive Angry. That should have been on
this. This is true.
We missed that one because we don't do anything scientific at all. The first one on the list is Death Race 2000. And not Death Race, although that wasn't awful, but it wasn't good either.
You know what was awful? Death Race 2.
That was pretty bad. But Death Race 2000 was brilliant and amazing and irreverent and had boobs in it. It was awesome. So, yeah, and it was a great driving movie.
Lots of fun. I agree. Yeah. I probably wouldn't use the term brilliant, but it was lots of fun.
I love it. He's a great friend of mine, a very close friend of mine. There's a lot of just sort of looking at media culture, which is so true even today.
Oh, definitely.
So, you can do the next one.
So next on the list, you've got the Mad Max Road Warrior.
Well, actually, I had Breakdown, but...
Oh.
That's yours. Wow. That's why I said yours.
Oh, sorry. Then we'll go with
Spoiler.
Breakdown.
Spoiler!
Now that I've ruined number three. Yeah, Breakdown is the Kurt Russell movie from Jonathan Mostow, director. Spends a lot of time in the car and in the truck in that movie, and the one thing that, to me, makes it a great vehicle film is that Mostow went out of his way to shoot everything practical.
Yeah.
So, like the car stunts, the car action, there's none of that, you know, there's not much in the way of trickery, if any at all. It's all done practical with, you know, actual, like, metal on metal, just, you know, smash 'em ups, and the action, the movie itself is really good as well. It's got some good twists in it, but the action, the car action, the truck action is really solid.
It helps that it came out in the mid-90s, so they weren't quite...
Definitely. Back when Kurt Russell could get a leading man gig.
Well, also, back in the days when they didn't have blue screen and green screen and digital effects as refined as they do now, and they wouldn't attempt to do the stuff they do now.
True. Yeah. They had... Oh, I have to go back and check and see, but they had some... I don't know. I can't think of any examples, but yeah, it was not nearly as prevalent as it is nowadays. Yeah.
Well, I mean, like using Drive Angry, which I mentioned earlier, did a lot of virtual camera and moving around, and it was all CG. And I mean, that it was we thought garbage. It was appropriate for the movie, but I think if they made Breakdown today, there'd be a lot of push to do green screen, blue screen.
Oh, definitely, because they would try and do bigger stunts that aren't going to be able to be accomplished realistically.
Yeah.
So they would, you know, put that kind of stuff in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Agreed.
The funny story I have for Breakdown was I was listening once on the radio to Dr. Laura Schlesinger. I'm sorry, but and she was talking about the movie and she was talking about how it ends. For those who don't know, I'm just spoiling a bunch of movies today. But the ending of the film, the bad guys, J.T. Walsh, is at the bottom of a ravine. He's fallen. His truck has fallen into the ravine like 1,000 feet down. And he's crushed, his back's broken, and like Kathleen Quinlan reaches it and like takes the truck out of gear, and then just like sends the truck reeling. This like 18-wheeler just crushes him, and Dr. Laura Schlesinger was like, that sends the wrong message. That's just plain murder and blah blah blah. And then I'm like, I gotta see this fucking movie. And then I saw it, I'm like, that was a great ending. Because I hate movies when they end and they go, it's just not worth it. I'm like, no, it sure is. Do it.
Yeah, exactly.
You didn't need him to pull a gun out of his boot and then try and shoot her for her to throw that truck down on him. She just needed to throw the truck down on him.
Well, you know, he put them through hell.
Yeah.
And he's missed because Walsh plays a great villain.
Yeah.
So he definitely was one that you wanted them to crush him.
Absolutely. The next one on the list is, no big surprise here, The Road Warrior and Mad Max, just because these are great driving movies. And they just last year, I think, they came out with Mad Max on Blu-ray with the original Australian dialogue and soundtrack. Because a lot of people don't realize this, the VHS and earlier American DVDs, I believe, were all dubbed.
Yeah, Gibson was dubbed.
Everybody was dubbed, and it's...
Well, Gibson's the only one you recognize as being dubbed, though.
Well, yeah, but everybody is... It's poorly dubbed. It's not well dubbed. I mean, there are good movies that have a good dubbing to it, but not this. So now you can get it on Blu-ray in America and actually watch the original Australian, because we can't understand them. Oh, sheesh.
Mm-hmm.
And then The Road Warrior, of course. These are great driving movies. Lots of action, lots of cars, lots of cars crashing into things. So,
speaking of which,
there we go.
The next on the list, Clint Eastwood's The Gauntlet, with him and Sandra Locke, who always annoyed the hell out of me, but I put up with her in this movie because it just is, to me, it's just one of my favorites of Eastwood's early movies. It's one that he directed as well, one of the many he directed, but it's a bus at the center of it instead of a car, but that thing just goes through hell and back, and they smash through all kinds of things in that movie.
Awesome. Now, and see, I haven't seen that. Now, this was...
Oh, seriously? You definitely got to check it out, because it literally is just that. He basically has got to get her from point A to point B. It's like a 16 blocks type thing, the Bruce Willis movie.
Yeah.
But instead of walking around, they're in this bus that they've kind of like, you know, rigged up a little bit, and they're trying to get from point A to point B, and there's just everybody and their brother is after them. And, I mean, it's just fantastic, and it's got a great ending on it, too.
I'll have to check that one out, yeah. Because the thing is, Eastwood's movies, especially as of late, the last couple movies he's done, have been so weepy and heavy and dramatic. And
oh, no, agreed. Yeah, the 70s, as far as I'm concerned, are his best decade.
Because he's old now.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then, go ahead, and what's the last one?
The last one is actually the Hitcher, the original Hitcher from Robert Harmon, not that crappy remake with Sean Bean.
I kind of like that remake.
Really? Yeah. Ugh, this is no good. The original to me is just an absolutely fantastic film that just hits every note right. Mm-hmm. See Thomas Howell as the the everyman who gets trapped up in it. Rucker Hauer as the psychotic madman, which is never a bad thing to have him as your bad guy.
No.
And it's just it's a ballsy movie. It's got it kills people that you wouldn't expect to get killed. Mm-hmm. Which I guess we can spoil because it's been decades, but still, I'm not going to. I just a lot of fun. For
I
me.
Will.
An exciting movie. that movie is the one that what's his name? Ebert, Siskel and Ebert, when they were on this night show, this is back when the movie actually was in theaters. Mm. They spoiled it because they hated it so much, and they basically said that they said we don't like this movie. We don't want anybody to see it. Here's what happens. And they explain, and they tell you who dies and how.
They did that. They did that with the Crying Game too, didn't they?
Did they?
I think they did.
Ebert's done it a few times, but this is like on the Tonight Show. So like everybody and their brother was seeing it, and it just was.
I hate that. I hate that attitude of I don't like this movie, so I'm going to spoil it for everybody. Fuck you.
That's yep.
Well, on this show I do, apparently, but I usually don't spoil movies. I actually got an argument with my brother-in-law. Well, he wasn't my brother-in-law at the time. I was dating my wife. And I saw Alien 3. My wife and my girlfriend at the time, we'd gone and seen Alien 3, and then we were having dinner at her house. And her brother was asking me about it. Now, he was like 20 at the time, 19 maybe. Or he may have even been in high school still. No, he couldn't have been because he was old. Anyways, but regardless, he was a young, stupid kid. And he was asking about... he was asking how it ends. I go, I'm not going to tell you. He's like, tell me how it, I'm like, does she die? Does this? I go, I'm not telling you. He got so mad at me because I wouldn't. I said, I don't spoil the ending of movies. Flash forward 20 years.
And that's all you're doing.
Exactly. Honorable mention. You had Duel as an honorable mention from Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, that's a classic. And that was a TV movie, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. And with Dennis Weaver and a truck and an ending that doesn't give you any real answers, which is fantastic sometimes. Not always, but sometimes. And in this case, it is. But that one's got a lot of good car action, too, as he tries to avoid this truck that, for some reason, wants to run him off the road.
Just wants to kill him. Actually, the original short story I found more interesting than...
Richard Matheson's story?
Yeah, Richard Matheson's story was I thought, more interesting than the movie. So the movie just is it's so 70s TV.
Oh, well, definitely, definitely. But I think, I mean, especially as being one of Spielberg's first things, if not his first, it definitely shows him as being a talented director. But, I mean, because it really comes down to just the one guy on the road trying to avoid this truck is all it is. And he milks it for almost the entire running time and does a good job with it.
Yep. All right. And the ones that are not on the list is Taxi is not on the list. so... I can't think of other ones I want to just throw some hate on, so we better go to a break. And welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We had an interesting middle segment. We talked about the box office. We talked a little bit more about Drive. Well, I mean, actually talked about Drive. We didn't talk about it at all in the second segment. We also talked about, we took some voicemails and answered an email, and we also talked about our favorite great driving movies. But now, we got something else coming up. What's next here, Rob?
I do believe it's the world famous DVD Roundup.
That's right. We got a lot this week, so I just want to, you love that. Wasn't that awesome? Lucas is going to go back and add actually a Lucasfilm sound effect to all my old shows, I'm sure, at some point when he acquires us for 58 cents.
Good deal.
So, but yeah, X-Men First Class actually came out last Friday, but I don't like to talk about those until after they come out. So X-Men First Class is out. That's a great movie.
Agreed.
Definitely worth checking out. It's one of the great prequels of the summer of 2011. Also Thor, which was okay. It was fun. Meek's Cutoff is there, which is an interesting movie. I didn't find it particularly riveting, but it's the story of settlers in the West and has an interesting aspect ratio. They shot it in 4:3 because it was like the perspective of a woman looking through a bonnet.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know if you knew that.
I did.
Yeah. you're so smart.
I try.
It's a bunch of TV shows. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, season 6. Great show. It's actually, you can pick up in the middle of it. You don't have to actually watch the first 5 seasons to understand it. The Big Bang Theory, season 4, I think came out this week, or maybe it comes out next week. Count of Monte Cristo, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, Halloween 2, The Frighteners all get Blu-ray releases this week. Of course, the family of the producer of Halloween 2 is boycotting because for some reason his name's taken off of it.
Mustafa Akkad.
Yeah. And The Tempest is on Blu-ray. This is Julie Taymor's version of... it's a very Julie Taymor-ish movie, and it's a version of the Shakespeare play. And there's also Glee Season 2, which I thought I'd mention, but I think you threw that somewhere.
Yeah, I threw it in the stinker pile.
Yeah. Well, tell us about the ones you recommend first.
Well, sticking with the TV theme, because the past few weeks and then the next couple of weeks, there's a lot of TV shows coming out, because obviously the networks are getting back into the fall season here.
Yeah.
So two of the big ones last week and next week are the second seasons of Community and Modern Family, which
both
honestly are the two funniest shows on network TV right now, bar none. They're both out and definitely worth picking up. A couple other ones. I mean, I mentioned The Haunting at the Beacon earlier, and I wouldn't buy it, but it's one that if you can find rentals, I would definitely check it out, especially if you like horror films and ghostly movies.
Okay.
Two that I would probably consider buying and recommend buying, both also of the horror genre, actually. One is a vampire flick called We Are the Night. It's about three or four female, very attractive female vampires, and that's really all you need to know. So I highly recommend that one. It's really stylish. It's really stylish and a lot of fun. Good action. It's actually a German movie, but don't hold that against it.
Sehr gut.
The other one is actually I think you can still find it available like on older DVD here, but it just came out on a new special edition DVD in the UK. It's that movie Pieces, which I had never seen until recently, and I gotta say it's basically about a killer with a chainsaw. Is to sum it up, is making like a human puzzle, but it's not at all what you think it is. The movie is absolutely hilarious, and it's intentionally so. It's not like played as a comedy necessarily, but it just is absolutely funny as hell. I mean, it's gory and there's tons of nudity, so it fills all those quotas as well. But the movie is just damn funny, and I highly recommend picking that up as well.
Awesome. The stinkers this week, you got Grey's Anatomy season 7 and Private Practice season 4. Grey's Anatomy, I'm sort of on the fence. I don't like the show, but I know a lot of people love it. But Private Practice, there's no excuse for that garbage on television.
I stopped watching Grey's Anatomy like 5 seasons ago, apparently.
Grey's Anatomy's not. It's too self-awareness trying to.
It's full of itself,
It is so full of itself. And every character in Grey's Anatomy is like, they have to do a speech before something happens. Somebody's like going to order like a chicken salad. He's like, I've always loved chickens. I grew up with chickens, and I was on a farm, and I had chickens all the time. And I was, I had chickens. And every time we had a chicken. So yeah, I'll have a chicken salad. That is how a Grey's Anatomy dialogue works. So what do you have? Have Glee on there.
I would add Glee. And I'm actually a fan of the first season of Glee.
I love the first season.
Yeah, so do I. That's what I'm saying. It was funny. It was fresh. The characters were interesting. It was entertaining, even the musical numbers and all that. But the second season, for me, it just completely tanked. It pretty much jettisoned anything, resembling character development, and instead decided to go with, hey, whatever the hot song of the week is, on the radio, who the hot artists are they can get. They gave a silly role to Gwyneth Paltrow,
She had a seizure and died in that.
Yeah, that would have been nice. It just, the entire season was all about being gimmicky, and it just didn't advance anything. I'm not a fan. The first season, great show. The second season, terrible.
Yeah.
And then I also tossed on their Outsource. They put out the complete series. I didn't watch the whole season. I won't pretend I did, but I watched several episodes. Mm. Well, by several, I mean three. But I tried to give it a chance because it was part of NBC's really solid Thursday night block, and the show was just terrible.
Well, I've only seen like the ending after I've taped like The Office or whatever. I get like the first 30 seconds right. of it.
And did you laugh? No.
Yeah, it didn't make me tape it. So, review wrap up. We got Drive. We both said rocked, and then the rest. I don't know why they made it. The Lion King 3D and Straw Dogs. We don't know, but The Lion King's good. Don't know if it's worth a 3D. Next week, we're going to be talking about Abduction with Taylor Leonard, Killer Elite, Dolphin Tale, and Monkey Ball. I mean, Moneyball. Rob Hunter, tell us quickly where you find it. You got 20 seconds. Where can we find you?
FilmSchoolRejects.com. Again, check out everything we do there. But for me personally, you're going to find the foreign films, the foreign objects column, as well as the This Week in DVD.
Awesome. Thank you again for doing this.
Thank you very much for having me.
You can catch us at FatGuysInTheMovies.com, and I think that's about it. Till another day, we'll talk to you later. Bye.